You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
And thank you so much to our 3CR tech team on site and in studio who brought us that brilliant outside broadcast this morning on the 171st anniversary of the Eureka Rebellion. My name's Karina. I'm here in the studio with Vittorio from Radio Filef, and we'll be presenting the next hour or so, keeping on with the Eureka theme in the last hour before our Disability Day 12-hour yearly special broadcast for 3CR. Hi, Vittorio, and you can hear that I've lost my voice this morning somewhat.
Good morning, Karina.
So it is approximately 6 a.m. on the 3rd of December. And part of the reason why I've lost my voice this morning is because over the weekend we attended a wonderful event at the offices of the Maritime Union in West Melbourne. Vittorio, did you want to tell us a little bit about the event that we went to and what we'll be listening to for the next hour?
Yeah, so Spirit of Eureka put on an event marking 50 years since the Whitlam dismissal and also for the Eureka Rebellion anniversary. They gathered there that night with speakers from the MUA, including Kevin Bracken and Dave Ball, Gary Foley, Sarah Barini from Palestine Liberation, and Shirley Winton from the Spirit of Eureka. They gathered to continue the struggle for Australia's genuine independence and to build a movement to end US-Australia alliance and stop Australia from being dragged into US wars.
Yeah, so for the next hour, we'll be listening to just a handful of those speeches and possibly including also a little segment at the end if we have time with one of the performers there who we actually saw at a protest later on in the weekend. And was kind enough to give us a short interview on the steps of the State Library. So first up, we'll be listening to Professor Gary Foley, as introduced by Kevin Bracken, the MC of the night. But before we go to that, I just want to say it was just a really wonderful time to have all those people in the room together. We had such great conversations. There was just such a wealth of memory. And the Spirit of Eureka organizers and all their friends just had such great stories to tell. And on and off mic just had this wonderful way of, at their yearly commemoration, just tying all these issues together in such a brilliant way. What did you reckon, Vittorio?
Yeah, I agree. I think the story of the Eureka Rebellion, the Eureka Stockade, is an important one to continue to be told, particularly because of its position in Australian history and how you can see that the symbol, the Eureka flag, is sometimes co-opted by bad actors, and the true history there can be distorted. So it was good to hear the relevance of that that history being told by the various speakers, but also the continued relevance with contemporary issues from those affecting the labour movement here, the anti-war movement, and Indigenous struggle as well.
Yeah, and also on the issue of the genocide that's currently happening in Palestine as well. I suppose we'll discuss a little bit more regarding some of the issues that tie in and the kind of recurring themes that we kept discussing later on this weekend just passed, later on this hour. But for now, let's go to some of the audio. We'll hear from the great Kevin Bracken introducing Professor Gary Foley with his first presentation that night. And, of course, just a reminder for listeners, you're on 3CR Community Radio, where on the 3rd of December we commemorate, one, the anniversary of the Eureka Rebellion, and two, International Day of People with Disability. And our special broadcast for Disability Day will kick off at 7 a.m., so don't forget to stay tuned.
Okay. I'd like to first of all start by just welcoming everyone here. We're in the rooms of the MUA, and we like to host progressive groups here, and we love it when people who are asking and working for a better world want to come together and make these rooms available. We recognise we're on the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, land that was never ceded. And tonight's talk, we're reviewing 50 years since the Whitlam dismissal, but also in the context of the 171 years since the Eureka Rebellion. It was the first case of multicultural in Australia. People from 21 different countries got together who'd been working hard trying to find gold. Didn't give proper recognition to the First Nations people, but one of them, Raphael Carboni, actually lived with the Tarang tribe, and he described a few trips while he was here in between looking for gold and doing jobs as a shepherd, lived with them and described them as very humane people. But there's a lot going on right now in this world too. And we'd like to just speak about those things in context, what happened 50 years, what happened 171 years, and bring them into context of what's happening now in the world and what we can do to make this world a better place. The world never stays the same, it's always changing. And it's always a battle between people looking for a better world, a more just life, a life where is available for everyone. And especially in this country here, there's enough in this country for everyone to have a really good life together. And as in the words of Mahatma Gandhi, there's enough in this world for every man's need. There can never be enough for any man's greed. And that battle's constantly going on. And we need to remind ourselves that we need to be aware of that. We really need to know which side of history we are on. So, in recognition of our First Nations people, I'd like to call on Gary to be our first speaker.
Thank you. Greetings, folks. I got reminded earlier on, I was trying to remember the first time I spoke at this particular function. I thought it was only 10 years ago, but somebody reminded me earlier on that I actually spoke at the inaugural version of this thing 20 years ago. So that's just sort of an indication of probably some of us looking around the room, probably a lot of us here are starting to suffer from long short-term memory loss and other old age sort of problems. But the important thing is that we're all still here, folks. That's the important thing for now, you know. 20 years ago, there's a lot more of us, but at least we're still here. And as usual, I came totally unprepared, but I think it's really important to mention, and it's, other people are going to say more important things than me, but one of the things that's fired me up again late in life in the last couple of years has been what's been going on in Gaza, and one of the really great things I think that's happened in the last 2 years in Melbourne anyway. First of all, 50 years ago, around the time of the Yom Kippur War, those who were coming out and marching in the streets in support of the Palestinian people, there wasn't many of us. Whereas nowadays, in the last couple of years, we've seen a far greater numbers out there on the streets of Melbourne. And Melbourne, as always, is leading the country in terms of getting people onto the streets to raise that issue. The other important thing that I think has fired me up and kept me going is the encouraging thing that I see with lots of young Indigenous people, young Aboriginal people on the streets marching in support. Back 50 years ago, there was only about three or four of us out there, Aboriginal people marching, but now there's a greater level of awareness, and that's really significant. Another thing that in the last week or two that has fired me up a bit, for the last 20 years or more, in my teaching that I've been doing, now that I'm a professor, I've been teaching my students what happened in 1975. And I keep telling, I've been saying for 20 years or more, or for more than that, talking about the CIA's involvement, about Christopher Boyce and all that sort of stuff. And finally, this year, 50 years later, finally, you know, finally the mainstream's starting to talk about it. John Menadue, the piece he wrote on the 50th anniversary this year, not only did he talk about the CIA's involvement, he also sort of talked about the British security agencies involved in as well. And Menadue's an important voice because he was there. And unlike an associate of mine, Professor Marcia Langton, who went from being on the extreme left 50 years ago to now being on the extreme right, John Menadue seems to have made the journey in a different direction, which is good, because it's about time that Australians and my students, I showed my students both John Menadue's article and Guy Rundle's article, and I also showed them the film on where Christopher Boyce talked about what happened 50 years ago. And finally, my students sort of see the importance of what I'm trying to convey to them, that, you know, what happened in Chile when they knocked off Allende, the world knew about that. When they knocked off Whitlam, you know, Murdoch was able to sort of bullshit Australians into thinking that, you know, Malcolm Fraser was a good guy. But as we all remember, the graffiti from Mal's day, vote Mal, eat pal. But moving on, I just sort of rattling on off the top of my head. I mean, I'm here tonight because, like I said, I was there 20 years ago. Many of my comrades who were there 20 years ago are no longer with us. The person who probably got me thinking in this sort of direction, one of my great mentors, Bruce McGuinness, is the one who's probably more responsible than anyone else, along with Angelo Grando, his best friend. They're the two people who politically educated me and encouraged me. Well, not only that, the other person who was a great inspiration to me was that great Aboriginal philosopher, Mao Zedong. That's all I can say, folks. Thank you.
Thanks, Gary. And yeah, we don't want you to prepare anything, mate. We love you speaking straight from your heart. Good on you, mate.
That was Gary Foley speaking at the event on Saturday night, 50 years since the Whitlam dismissal and the Eureka Rebellion. We'll continue listening to speakers from that night. Up next, we'll hear from Dave Ball of the MUA.
Yeah, he's the Assistant Branch Secretary of the MUA and the presenter of the MUA's Fire Up show, which is fortnightly on a Thursday morning right here on 3CR. And we'll hear from Dave in his own words about some of the history, significant history of the MUA that gives it a really special place in our workplace struggles in this country. And the MUA has always been a great supporter of internationalist causes throughout history. He also talks about some of the more recent battles and initiatives that the union's doing, and including some of the discussion regarding what they can and do in relation to Palestine and Palestinian solidarity nowadays. So without further ado, we'll now hear from Dave Ball at that event on Saturday night.
What's happening in Palestine just draws back the whole thing about the rules-based order and everything. There is no rules. People who have the power to do it are just taking it, and they're doing it so blatantly that it can't be covered up anymore. Well, hopefully more and more of us become active and actually do something about it and talk to our friends and neighbours and everyone else too. And what's also been under attack too in the last few years has been the working conditions. The Maritime Union, I'll talk about that for a second just before Dave, I don't want to steal your thunder. But we did have like over 150 Australian registered ships. We're now down to 9. Now, we're an island nation. We're totally dependent on foreign shipping companies. You know, and the reason why they don't is because they don't want to see it. We did things like, you know, we didn't take weapons to Vietnam, you know, and when things weren't right, we'd stopped it. But part of the attack, it's not only against First Nations people who are trying to steal resources from countries who want to use them for other purposes, but also to trample people in our own country too. And I remember, it was set up as a colony, but not all the people who came here were volunteers. They were sentenced here for 7 years for doing things like stealing a rabbit, you know, poaching a rabbit or stealing a loaf of bread. So, and a lot of people who were here had been maybe convicts and things like that, but also realised this is a beautiful country and there's a lot to offer, and actually started working and making it their own land too. So at the time of Eureka, you know, a lot of that went on. I've waffled on enough. I'm going to hand over to Dave Ball, the Deputy Secretary for the Maritime Union of Australia. Good on you, Dave.
Thanks, Kevin, and thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I've been asked to speak about, you know, workers' disputes, and obviously I've got the maritime bent on it. That's what I do for a living. Well, it's probably more of a love thing than a living, but I'd also like to just acknowledge the Palestinian people and their struggle, and, you know, it makes me feel like, you know, our disputes pale against what those people are going through. So, you know, our hearts go out to all of you. My favourite photo of Gough Whitlam is when he's pouring the dirt from the Gurindjeri land into the hand of Vincent Lingari in 1975. I love that photo, and the MUA had a, well, it was the WWF back then, had a proud part to play in that, where the wharfies from Darwin drove down to that area and helped supply, you know, bring food and water to those Aborigines who were in the fight for their lives. So it means a lot to the MUA to that actual photo. There's been lots of struggles over the last couple of years, and the MUA are always under attack. You know, they call the ports the gateway to the economy, and so the MUA and the, will always be under attack. But we will always fight back, and we're here to stay. That saying emerged from the 1998 dispute, and I know a lot of people in this room would have played a role in the 1998 dispute. Warren was telling me some stories tonight about the role that he played stalling the railway trains getting into Webb Dock at the time, and that was really interesting. And I know there's lots of people that did lots of things to support that dispute, and I'd just like to thank you all. So another major incident occurred in 1998 for the MUA that's probably not so well known, and that was an offshore company decided to remove the propulsion equipment from its drilling rig. By removing the propulsion equipment from the rig, it meant that the rig would no longer be covered by the MUA rules, and it would become covered by the AWU rules. The AWU award is not as good as the maritime award, and the workplaces were not as well organised, and that broke down a lot of our conditions in the offshore oil and gas industry. Over the last couple of years, the MUA have been fighting hard to restore that power, and we formed an alliance in Western Australia called the Offshore Alliance with the MUA and the AWU. In 2017, the Offshore Alliance had no members at all. In 2025, we have 4,000 members. We've negotiated over 120 EAs. We've got EAs with the big oil gas companies, Chevron, Shell, Woodside, and INPEX. And we continue to fight in that area. We just need to reinvent ourselves sometimes to make sure we keep the fight up. In 2017, the MUA was fined $2.4 million for walking off the job in Sydney at a cube dispute. They refused to load containers onto trucks for 2 weeks. We were fined $2.4 million. We're a union of just over 12,000 members. And that fine, we had to get a loan to actually pay that fine off, and we're still paying that fine off. Bad industrial relations laws, but we continue to fight back. In 2024, we ran a campaign against Cube, an EA campaign. And this time we took protected industrial action. For 3 months, our members walked off the job to support the claims in the EA, and it was the best outcome we've ever achieved against Cube. Automation is now our current dispute and our current battle that we're having. The VICT dispute, which I'm sure a lot of you people that are here probably also stood on the picket line down at VICT, when it opened here in Melbourne, the most automated port in Australia, There was only about 120 people working there, and only half a dozen of them were in the MUA. I can now say that 98% of that workforce are in the MUA, and there's up to 250 people working there now. So that was a great outcome for us. Just like when containerisation was introduced in the 60s, the MUAs had to reinvent themselves and make sure that we continue to maintain our jobs on the waterfront, and we'll continue to do that through the automation process. Automation is coming, unfortunately. In Australia right now, it's all based on union busting. The guys down at VICT, they sit in a room with joysticks driving the cranes. They override the automation process because it's not as efficient as the way they can drive it. So it's just purely about union busting. It's not about productivity gains. Unfortunately, in China, where the ports are a lot bigger, automation has taken that next step, and it has actually surpassed what humans can do on the waterfront. But the Chinese have got strong unions on the waterfront, and they've managed to maintain all those jobs in their unions, and will maintain all our jobs here in Australia. That's a massive campaign for us at the moment, but I'm sure it's something that we're going to win. Kevin mentioned Australian shipping. In the 80s, we had between 80 and 100 Australian flagged ships on the coast. Through a series of changes to legislation, providing loopholes for international corporate companies to come into Australia, they've managed to, well, Kevin said 9, I'm going to say there's 13 Australian flagged ships on the coast. We've been campaigning heavily around Australian shipping for a long time. We've got a campaign called the Australian Strategic Fleet. We've been up in Canberra on the lawns out the front of Canberra for many years. This campaign's taken many different sort of different approaches, like the fuel crisis. In Australia, we have enough diesel to last 28 days. If the ships stop coming down from Singapore with diesel on board, we will run out of diesel in 28 days. We are fighting to get more Australian ships on the coast. We're hoping to get an announcement early next year. It's only a small start, but we're expecting 3 new Australian flagships on the coast, and that'll be just the start to get a lot more Australian ships on the coast. The ITF have been amazing in helping us in that campaign. We have a great team of ITF inspectors here in Australia. This year alone, they're going to retrieve over $20 million US dollars of stolen salaries off international seafarers. That campaign helps support the Australian Strategic Fleet campaign by making large corporations pay what they should pay to workers who are doing our work. So by supporting international seafarers, we get a win-win situation. There's many, many struggles for us going forward, and over the years we've fought back every way we can. Although sometimes we have minor losses, we're always fighting back, and we always manage to remain controlling the Australian waterfront. We will continue to do that as we go forward. We will continue to fight for peace, continue to fight for the Palestinian people. We have declared that if there's any ammunition or arms going to Israel on any of our ships, we will refuse to load them. That's straight out of national office. We just need to identify what containers they are. My information is that most of that equipment is being flown to Israel rather than through the ports. But if we can identify any containers going to Israel, we will stand down and not load those containers. Our biggest battle at the moment is the CFMEU being put into administration. You would all know what's been going on there. We've lost another bunch of great organisers and people being forced to take redundancies last week. Really good people. We will continue to fight in that area. The manufacturing division of the CFMEU is leaving the CFMEU probably by the end of the year, which leaves construction and maritime as part of the CFMEU. And we all know that the unfortunate state that construction's in at the moment. So there's a lot of pressure on the maritime division to hold up the CFMEU, and we plan on doing that, and we'll continue to fight. And although it looks pretty dark at the moment, I'm sure we'll come out the end winners. MUA, here to stay. Thank you.
Yeah, well, actually, I'm a rank and file CFMEU member now myself too. But it's interesting to see where all this has come from. I mean, the Victorian branch is supposed to be the centre of corruption and things like that. The only person who's charged with anything now was Shax, our Indigenous officer. And Shax's case has been adjourned 4 times because it's all bullshit. There's nothing to answer for. And they've realised they've got no evidence or anything to go on. But they just put out headlines in the paper all the time. And the people who have been sacked, not one person in Victoria has been charged with by the police of anything at all. Anyway, I could go on for ages about it. It's a great injustice. One of the reasons, too, they want to get rid of the CFMEU is because it's a decent-sized union. It's an independent union who does think for itself. We need in this country people who want to stand up, who love this country and want to have a good life for everyone here, to actually be more active and make it happen.
The thing I'd like to say, I forgot, because I'm old, I got short-term memory loss. I meant to pay tribute to the MUA because 6 years ago, when I was, me and Ali Karzak from the old PLO rep from the 70s, when we were trying to organise an Aboriginal Palestinian Solidarity Conference, the first and biggest contribution that was made was from the MUA. And I just want to make sure that everyone knows how staunch they were then and how much we appreciated that then. Thank you.
You're here on 3CR Community Radio as part of our special commemoration of the anniversary of the Eureka Rebellion, the 3rd of December, and we're doing a special piece to lead us into our next batch of special programming, which will commence at 7 a.m. this morning. That'll be 12 hours of Disability Day special content. If you want to find out more about either of these programs or go and listen back to any part of either of these broadcasts, starting from the Eureka Day outside broadcast direct from Ballarat, which started at 4 a.m. this morning, through all the way through from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. as part of our International Day of People with Disability special programming, you can head to 3CR's website, 3cr.org.au, to find out more information. My name's Karina. I'm here in the studio with Vittorio, and we are listening back to an event that happened on Saturday night, and that was Dave Ball with also a little amendment from Gary Foley, who spoke earlier in the hour on the MUA's role in the Black Palestinian Conference. You went to that conference, is that right, Vittorio?
Yes, yeah, I did. I didn't know about the MUA's generous contribution. I think some of these things might get forgotten or overlooked or just might not be known. We heard from Dave Ball as well about the commitment from the National Office to not load any shipments of arms to Israel. And, you know, that's despite most of the arms being flown there. That history of solidarity goes back. It's not just with the conference that Gary mentioned. It's with a lot of other international causes for decades. So the MUA has always been a strong union in its support for people's struggles and the internationalist struggle.
Yeah, and we thought we would preface Shirley Winton's next and wonderful address with some of the connections she made in that discussion, just a handful of which that stuck out to me and kept reoccurring throughout the weekend, were some of her notes about the role of the US in the Whitlam dismissal, as well as some of the internationalist histories of the Eureka Rebellion, and also just talking about local repression and police. She makes note of this and many other issues and ties them all dexterously together. Vittorio, we did go to the counter-protest in the Melbourne CBD, and noted some of the police activities specifically, in which we had a conversation about part of what Shirley had to say. Do you want to take us through?
So, yeah, there was the March for Australia, I think the fourth instalment of their rallies or of this latest iteration of them. They've come and gone in the past, and this is just what we're dealing with now. So, as to be expected, the police have come out in force with their focus entirely on the counter-demonstrators and also providing an escort for the far-right racist rally, which was attended by a senator. We don't have to say her name, but I think people know who we're talking about. So just after here, like it was the night before that we heard Shirley's talk, and just thinking, you know, the police are there focusing their violence and repression on people who have come out to oppose reactionary racist ideas that are espoused by these March for Australia rally organisers and the attendees. And there was, I guess, unlike the other ones that had happened, there was really no way for the two marches to get close to each other. There was maybe an opportunity to reach the March for Australia rally where it had ended, but by that stage, the counter-protest had gone back to the library and wrapped up there. So Karina and I just thought, oh, well, the sun's come out, the rain stops, we might as well go for a walk. And we went up to Flagstaff to just have a look at what is actually going on there. And it's pretty much what you'd expect, cynical use of what are genuine issues around healthcare and housing and what would be grievances of a lot of people in Australia, being used to push an anti-immigration line, being used to drum up this, a traditional form of Australian racism, xenophobia, a residual kind of racism from the White Australia policy, and a use of it by a senator, but also the various groups there. There was Lions of Zion people there. There are a few, you'd call them grifters on the right-wing media. There was also this, I didn't really know who he was, but apparently he's a really rich kid with whose parents own a vast property portfolio and are behind actually calling for these rallies.
And, you know, something that we also thought it worthwhile noting was the use of the maritime flag and the Eureka flag, both by those in the sovereign citizen movement, which the reason why they use the red maritime flag is by a bizarre twisting of what they call maritime law, which has no basis really in reality in terms of there's so many different versions of that movement. I really don't necessarily want to go into the ins and outs of it. But similarly with the Eureka flag, and just, I suppose, a real symptom of what it means to kind of forget the true history of these meaning symbols and events like Eureka Day.
Yeah, over 20 nationalities were involved, of the communities that were there in Ballarat, of the miners. And it's a strange co-option by the far right, the use of these Australian nationalists of the Eureka flag, particularly because of their anti-immigration racist ideology that goes along with it, was just flies in the face of what the true legacy of Eureka is. I'll just say that I think at this stage, with the number of attendees there, they're now at fringe. It's really dropped off. There was only about 100 of them.
Yeah, that's right. It is a fringe. It's a fringe that definitely aligns with wider middle-of-the-road Australian racist ideology.
Yeah, that's been pushed by the current government. So it's amusing to hear their grievances about the immigration problem in their view when you've got a government that is proving to be very anti-migration itself.
One other thing that I did want to touch on before we moved into hearing Shirley's brilliant speech is just that, as I mentioned at the start of this hour, there was just such a wealth of knowledge and living memory of, I'm not going to say the Eureka Rebellion 171 years ago, but specifically of the Whitlam dismissal, of which 2025 marks the 50th year. And Shirley will give us a little bit more information about that in her speech.
Hear the spirit of Eureka, and a great social activist and a beautiful person.
So my little talk is a little longer than the others, but it's really more... it's a little bit of history of the Eureka Rebellion and the relevance it has for us today. And I think that most of us here know the efforts that the ruling class in Australia since 1854 has tried to, or the efforts it has taken to try and erase and distort the true meaning of the Eureka rebels. So, and I'll also talk a little bit about the Whitlam dismissal and the relevance, the connection between them. So we meet tonight on the stolen lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land that has been stolen. Tonight we are commemorating the anniversaries of the Eureka Rebellion and the dismissal of the Whitlam government, two defining moments symbolising the long struggles of Australia's working people for justice, democracy and independence, and for a fundamental change. But the fight for justice and sovereignty in this country did not begin with the Eureka Rebellion in 1854. It began 66 years earlier in 1788 with the first people's resistance to the British colonial invasion, the genocidal occupation and the theft of their country. Their resistance took many forms, including very fierce armed resistance in the frontier wars. British colonialism imposed on their country the exploitative, profit-driven system of capitalism to serve the British ruling class. Their land and country were never ceded and never recognised by treaties. This thread of struggle for justice, democratic rights and independence runs throughout 237 years of colonial occupation at the start and today imperialist control by the US. And the First People have always been at the forefront of resistance of this occupation. In 1854, the impoverished migrant miners at Eureka took up the fight for justice and independence. They rebelled against the oppressive colonial authority of the British ruling class. They called for an independent Australian Republic, democratic rights and equality for all, demands that were far ahead of their time. Their struggle helped pave the way for future victories for working people in Australia, including the world's first eight-hour day in 1856, and helped lay the foundations for Australia's militant trade union movement and the culture of working-class solidarity. Migrants from 21 nationalities participated in the Eureka Rebellion under the Eureka flag. They included Afro-American, Jamaican, and South Americans. And the working-class unity and multiculturalism had its beginnings at the Eureka Stockade. The British colonial ruling class fueled and relied heavily on racism and scapegoating to divide and control the miners and settlers. But Eureka leaders rejected these divisions. They condemned the racism promoted by British authority and called for unity of all people under the Eureka flag. In his famous speech, Raffaello Carboni at the stockade declared, quote, irrespective of nationality, religion and colour, to salute the Southern Cross as the refuge of all oppressed from all countries on earth. And it is as relevant today as it was that 171 years ago. In the formation of unions in late 19th century, workers and the unions fought under the Eureka flag for the right to organise in unions and fight for decent wages and conditions. The Eureka flag became and remains a powerful symbol of militant working class solidarity and struggle for justice against exploitation and oppression. And it excludes Nazis and racists. Attempts to malign, erase, or ban the flag or appropriate it by the Nazis and racists are not new. In 2006, under pressure from big developers and big business, the federal government tried to ban Eureka flags and insignias on building sites. But the widespread resistance by unions and workers forced the ruling class to immediately drop the ban. And the workers knew that the attacks on Eureka flag and Eureka insignia on building sites was aimed to crush all workers and unions' struggle, not just construction workers, as is what is happening now with the attack on the CFMEU. The attack is the entire working class of this country and the unions. The struggle for independence from British colonial empire continued through the mass mobilisation of workers and unions against conscription and the 1914-1917 World War. I think people would have read and heard about the history of the great struggles against conscription, and the Trades Hall has a wonderful collection of all the demands that the and the resistance by the trade union movement in Australia against conscription in imperialist war. After the Second World War, British control of Australia was replaced by the US economically, politically, and militarily, and this is more true now than I think ever before. And the struggle for independence continued. It was in the mass movement against conscription, this is talking about the late 1960s, and the Vietnam War, against Australia's involvement in US war against the Vietnamese people fighting for their liberation, in the opposition to secret military intelligence Pine Gap and other US military bases, against continuing oppression and theft of First Peoples land and destruction of their culture, in the movements for Australian progressive working people's culture, against the plunder of our natural resources and destruction of the environment by mining corporations. And so in 1972, Whitlam rode into government on the crest of this powerful people's movement. His government put the US on notice by threatening to close Pine Gap and other US military bases and started pivoting Australia towards the non-alignment movement. They began making plans to nationalise natural resources and corporate farms, took steps in acknowledging the sovereignty of the First People, and demanded ASIO breaks connections with the CIA. These were the demands of the people that brought Whitlam to power. And the tentative steps Whitlam started making towards independence were threatening the US and British economic and military control of Australia. So, the 1975 Whitlam dismissal was a CIA-UK engineered coup, as Gary has already spoken about, executed by the Governor-General John Kerr, Australia's representative of the British Crown, but also supported by the most conservative and reactionary forces in Australia. Since then, US control has deepened with every Australian government servile to the US, clearing the way for greater multinational corporations and finance capital control of this country. So today, the most powerful sectors of our economy are controlled by these corporations. Our natural resources, gas, oil, minerals, and even water are largely in the hands of multinational corporations: BHP, Woodside, Chevron, Rio Tinto, Exxon, Mobil, and Santos, and they're all the big companies, the big multinationals that Australia's working class is constantly fighting with, is struggling and resisting the constant pressure to push down wages and conditions. The giant global financial assets managers, such as US-owned BlackRock, wield enormous power through their financial control of privatised health services, childcare, aged care, and weapons corporations such as Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, Boeing, and some mining multinationals who are becoming the main manufacturing industry in this country. In finance, all four major banks are majority owned by US financial interests. In culture and media, the Murdoch Empire stifles the culture of Australia's working people. These corporations use their core economic power on servile governments on this country through the Mining Council of and Business Council of Australia. Between them, they represent the top 100 biggest corporations in this country, and most of them are foreign-owned. They use their power over governments to reduce or remove barriers to their plunder of natural resources on the lands of the First People, environmental destruction and exploitation of workers. And people's resistance to this plunder and exploitation is met with escalating repression through state, through the state anti-protest, anti-democratic, anti-worker and so-called anti-terror laws that we're now witnessing across the country. Privatised essential services, childcare, aged care and social services are increasingly owned by global financial asset managers. The multinationals and local corporations pocket billions in profits from the stolen lands and genocide of the First People and the exploitation of all workers in this country. Militarily, Australia has become a major US base and a launching pad for US war as it prepares for US-led war with China. And in the military sector, US-owned Lockheed Martin, Boeing, Raytheon and Israel's Elbit influence and pressure Australian governments to expand the manufacture and export of weapons for their corporations' profit-making and in our economy and in the education system. And we're now witnessing this particularly with the weapons being sent to Palestine, the Elbit, the Lockheed Martin, and they are instrumental in pressurising the government and the government being servile enough to export the weapons to US and Israel. Today, the US control of Australia is most visible in the deep integration and the interoperability of Australia's military and defence with US military forces and the military-industrial complex. We are an extension of the US global military and its war machine. Thousands of US Marines in Darwin, the Force Posture Agreement giving US unimpeded access to all of Australia's defence and civil infrastructure, the AUKUS Pact, the US nuclear submarines in our ports, and nuclear weapons capable B-52 bombers flying over Darwin and over North Australia. More than $400 billion of Australian public money is being poured into the US ailing economy and its military-industrial complex, a burden on Australia's working people. Public money taken away from health, education, housing, environment, and rebuilding Australia's sovereign manufacturing industries, like the shipbuilding industry that we used to have. Giving away our rare earth and critical minerals on the lands of the First People surrenders further to the US the little sovereignty Australia has left. As long as Australia's economy is dominated by the US and its military, our foreign or any big power for that matter, our foreign policies will always serve the profit needs of those powers. It is the class that controls the economy, and we are witnessing this now with our foreign policies in regard to China, in regard to Palestine, our position in Australia's position in the United Nations, which are basically rubber stamps just about every US move to block, for instance, the recognition of Palestine. But the impacts of this domination on everyday lives of ordinary people and the environment continue to fuel powerful movements for justice, workers' rights, environment, and for genuine independence away from US militarism. And that resistance that began with the 1788 British invasion and occupation and continues today. And I think we should all remember this continuity, this thread of struggle for Australia's sovereignty and independence was started by the First Nations people here. So the wealth of this country must be placed in the hands of the First Peoples and the working class who created. The collective wealth must be used for the needs of the people and the environment, not by profiteering corporations and the wars and the tiny parasitic billionaire clears. So I get fucked, Gina Reinhardt. This is what the Eureka Rebellion and its flag stood for 171 years ago. It is what the Whitlam dismissal, i.e. the CIA coup, exposed to the world, or exposed to us, 50 years ago. So a broad and united people's movements of workers, farmers, professionals, communities from all nationalities, cultures and religions makes a powerful force in the continuing struggles for truly just, democratic, independent and united Australia. So just to close, I just want to quote Karl Marx, writing about Eureka in 1855, only a few months after the rebellion. Quote, "Eureka was a revolutionary movement. It was a revolution, small in size, but great politically. It was a strike for liberty, a struggle for a principle, a stand against injustice and oppression." So for 171 years, the ruling class has tried to erase from history this revolutionary progressive spirit of Eureka Rebellion and its flag, and the armed resistance by the First People, and the flag that united the impoverished miners in their struggles against the oppressive British colonial ruling class. This proud legacy belongs to Australia's working people and continues to inspire us today in the fight for an independent and just Australia. So I don't need to say any, urge people to get involved in struggle here, because I think everyone is here. But if you're not, there's a myriad of people's organisations, community groups that are really trying to change the world for the better. And in that regard, I just want to give a plug to a book that just has recently been published. It's called Search for Security, AUKUS and the New Militarism. And it's been, we're selling it, No AUKUS Coalition Victoria. We've got our book out there, and it's a really worthwhile book to read. So we urge people to read, because AUKUS is absolutely integral to Australia being locked into the US war and into US militarism. So thank you.
You're listening to 3CR. Community Radio. That was Shirley Winton speaking at the Spirit of Eureka event on Saturday night, last Saturday, marking 50 years since the Whitlam dismissal and the Eureka Rebellion anniversary, which is today, the 3rd of December.
And following her presentation, there were wonderful musical performances from Filipino singer-songwriter Berlin, and also a young band that had played at a anti-AUKUS event in Solidarity Hall earlier this year called Breeze, which we'll link in the show notes at 3cr.org.au/Eureka171. We've been listening to a special program as part of our commemoration of the anniversary of the Eureka Rebellion, which falls on today. To kick us off for the day before our Disability Day special program commences at 7 a.m. We've just been hearing from part of the event at the MUA on Saturday night, 50 years since the Whitlam dismissal and the Eureka Rebellion anniversary. And it was a pleasure. Thanks to all involved. Now we're going to say goodbye.
Stick around for our Disability Day special programming, which will be from 7 o'clock this morning all the way through till 7 p.m. tonight.
And also a short note to take us in on that theme. Thank you to Earth Matters and Women on the Line for giving up their program slots this morning. Well worthwhile listening back, especially to Women on the Line, where Sen highlights part of an audio recorded by disability advocate Alice Wong from one of our previous Disability Day broadcasts. I highly recommend that one. Also, for anybody interested in some of the upcoming events and actions, today from 11 a.m. till 1 p.m, the wonderful disability self-advocacy organisation, the Victorian Self-Advocacy Network, is holding a protest at Victorian Parliament. Disability is not a target. Join us to end the violence everywhere and speak up for respect and safety for people with disability. So do get down there if you can. That's 11 a.m. till 1 p.m. today at Victorian Parliament House, the Victorian Self-Advocacy Network protest. And on Saturday, head down to the Coburg Mall if you can for another rally by the wonderful folk over at the Sydney Road Accessible Tram Stop campaign, where they'll be continuing the fight for accessible tram stops up Sydney Road on the, what line is that? What tram line is that, Vittorio?
The North Coburg number 19.
The number 19, which does not have accessible tram stops anywhere between Park Street coming out of the city and the end of the line. And this campaign was formed in response to the level crossing removal announcement, which was set to close many of the stops on the upfield line, rendering the majority of that northern network completely inaccessible to not just those with disability, but many different members of the community. So that'll be at the Coburg Mall outside near the library.
See you there. You've been listening to 3CR's Eureka Day special broadcast. Earlier this morning, we had a live broadcast from Ballarat.
Yeah, for the dawn ceremony on the hallowed ground of Ballarat, held by Reclaim the Radical Spirit of Eureka, along with the Ballarat Trades Hall.
And if you want to listen back to our Eureka Day special broadcast, you can go to www.3cr.org.au/Eureka171.
That's right. And now we'll let our wonderful Disability Day programming commence. Thanks so much to all involved, especially the wonderful Pauline Vituna. We hope you enjoy the day's programming. It's been a pleasure, Vittorio. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Karina.